Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Uh-oh. Did he just leave?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, you're back.
I'm clearing my throat. I had to cough.
You have a button now?
I have a cough button. I have a button now. Well, I always had a button. I moved it closer to where I am.
Congratulations. Hello, everyone. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where sometimes you are learning in real time, even as the show begins. None of us is as smart as all so of us. Figured, good news for Kyra's dog. Good news.
I figured after a year of doing this thing from my shed, I should move the button from way across the tiny little room I'm in to closer to me so that I could cough and burp and do all those things that I do on Fridays with a beer in me. But anyway, so what do you want to know Wednesday? Time to answer some of all y'all's questions.
Yes, including a big one right off the bat, from MK Mitty on Twitter, who writes and says, this needs a little translation. I'm going to warn you up front because at first you're going to be like, what now? The tweet goes like this. Seems like the widespread Hafnium hack of Microsoft Exchange servers is a big deal. How much is this likely to affect businesses in the U.S.? Will we see a ransomware spike? Remember how SolarWinds seemed like kind of a big deal? And it probably is and everything, maybe we think. I don't know. And we're still waiting for the other shoe to drop on that one. But then, as of just a few days ago, Hafnium apparently is a pretty well-known Chinese hacking group and pretty sophisticated. And it is believed that this group is responsible for a hack of as many as 60,000 customers using Microsoft Exchange server. So, like, you know, companies that use Outlook, which is a lot. It is expected to be, it's just a huge deal. The European Banking Authority has admitted that it is one of the victims. I think probably most everybody else is like, we would prefer not to say anything about this, but it is, it's just like a huge deal. I saw somebody tweeting about it actually the day that it happened, and they were basically like, our entire security framework is borked, like broken. Does not work. The federal government is saying there's going to have to be, we're screwed. Like, are there going to be more ransomware attacks? For sure. Are there going to be further intrusions as a result of this? Absolutely. Because in some ways, the worst case scenario is when email gets hacked. So if emails are a part of this, let alone all the other things that go through a Microsoft Exchange server in a given company, it's basically a disaster. And of course, it sounds like Microsoft was warned months ago that it was going to be a problem. It's gotten even bigger. They weren't going to do an out-of-cycle patch, you know, because they're like, we patch security vulnerabilities on Tuesdays. Yeah. And everyone's like, you should actually patch this one like 6 hours ago at least.
Just to play this out, this is that thing that you talked about when we talked about SolarWinds, which is the, what's her name, Nicole Proroth book, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends, when we talked about that, the water plant down in wherever the heck it was, which had, you know, the chemicals altered or whatever. I mean, it's like deeply perilous if they decide to get perilous on us.
It really is. And it's actually getting sort of like closer and closer and more perilous every day. And yet our, you know, as this person was pointing out on Twitter, our security framework is sort of just like centralized, increasingly the cloud, everything hooked up to the internet, whether it needs to be or not. And companies being like, it's fine.
You know what I'm the analogy here for me, which just popped into my mind, and tell me if you think I'm right. You know how back when there used to be security breaches all the time and our personal data would get stolen and everybody was like, oh my God, my personal data, they've got my, you know, whatever. And eventually now, and maybe this is just me, I don't know. Now I'm like, oh yeah, fine, whatever. They got another one, right? And that's kind of what this is, I worry that is going to happen, is there are going to be so many of these hacks and so many of these infiltrations, and we're going to be like, oh yeah, whatever. And then one day, everything's just going to go zzz, and that's going to be it.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, the kind of shift toward ransomware is something that's been happening for several years, but that makes the stakes really high. You know, we've seen hackers actually just lock people out of hospital networks and say like, yeah, we're just going to turn off your hospital unless you pay us. And we're starting to see insurance companies hop too and sort of be like, how are we going to deal with assessing cybersecurity risk and ransomware risk as an insurance conversation? Like, it's possible that the risk, the financial risk, will start to drive the response in a better way, because so far it has been just like, oh, well, information is out there, what to do. But it's possible that maybe this is horrible, but maybe more real world impact will make companies take it seriously. Yeah. And I mean, we've talked to a lot of security experts who are like, look, there has to be some regulation to force companies to do the work they don't want to do right now because it's expensive. You know, nobody likes to address risk unless they have to. And we're well past the point where that can continue to be the standard operating procedure.
Yep. Yep. Man, it's a mess. Okay. We talked child care yesterday with Sonia Michelle from Maryland, Professor Emerita. Child care, child tax credit, all that good stuff. We got this question from John in Michigan. Here's what he said. It's an email. John, we've got instructions on how to do a voicemail. I'm just saying. Anyway, here's what he said. I keep hearing how the child tax credit is going to cut child poverty in half, which is obviously great progress and should be celebrated. But why not 100%? What additional steps and policies need to be put in place to further reduce child poverty? Well, lots. I'm just going to go straight to Sonia Michelle. Yesterday, she said, and she pointed out, that this is a one-year provision in this tax code, right? So it's to be clear, the child tax credit has been expanded. Most Americans, single parents making less than $75,000, I think, and couples making less than $150,000, $3,000 a year in tax credits for every child 6 to 17, $3,600 for each child under the age of 6. It would, says Columbia University, reduce child poverty in the United States by 45%, which is amazing. 5 million kids come out of poverty, but it's a one-year deal. It's a one-year deal. And Sonia Michelle says we need more than just that, because giving somebody $3,000 if they're out of work isn't going to get them out of poverty. I would also suggest one more part of this, which is that what we have in this bill is arguably the greatest expansion of government power and influence in this economy since Reagan decided that the era of big government was over. And the challenge now is going to be able to make this stick. That's going to be the challenge, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you could also, you know, regular listeners of this show are not going to be surprised to hear me say, at least, that if you want to cut child poverty in half by 100%, universal child care and living wages. Oh, yes. I mean, people are poor because they don't get paid enough, and or they can't go to work because of a million barriers that this this country has set up, whether it's systemic racism or just wages that haven't risen meaningfully in 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how.
Yeah.
That's how.
To be really clear, there is so much in this bill that is to that point about expanding government. There's so much in this bill. I encourage you to read. There was a piece in the Journal laying it out. There was a piece in the Washington Post laying it out. Some of the stuff that's in this bill is truly could be life-changing for millions and millions and millions of people and would change the fabric of this economy in really substantive ways. So check out those stories. Our producer of all things, producer of all trades, Tony Wagner, will put it on the show page. Okay. Another question from Jim in San Francisco. He writes, and Jimmy. Voicemails, people, voicemails. We're going to put those instructions up on the show page as well. What is happening, Jim in San Francisco wants to know, with all the cargo container vessels sitting at anchorage in the San Francisco Bay? Normally they are in and out in a day or two. Now they seem to be sitting for days at a time. How is this affecting the supply chain and stores' ability to stock shelves? Excellent question.
Oh my God. Also, question. I know. I can see them from my house and I keep commenting on it. Like, we keep saying, are there more ships? It seems like there are more ships. Are they broken? And I was like, I think they're just parked. There are tons of them in the San Francisco Bay, which apparently it's not just here. They're up and down California, right? There's a big traffic jam at the ports.
Yeah. Huge thing in Long Beach. My guess would be that there's the same way up in Seattle and pretty much anywhere coming out of Asia. Here's why. Two reasons. Number one, we're doing a lot more online ordering, and a lot of that stuff comes from overseas, and so we get it through the ports, but it's slow, and there's lots of volume. Number two, as things get going in this economy, there's more demand, and so people are ordering more, and it's just getting kludgy and slowing stuff down. Pent-up demand is the phrase.
And that's why there's a traffic jam, which is so interesting. So these ships I'm seeing are not, because I just assumed, wow, I guess it's the ongoing pandemic and these poor ships are stranded because people can't work.
No,
you're saying it's the opposite. It's like they're just waiting for their turn.
They're waiting for their turn, right? There are X number of longshoremen and cargo container unloading facilities, and there are X plus infinity number of ships.
And one assumes some number of workers who are not able to come to work because it sounds like they're waiting to get vaccinated. They'll be added back to the workforce. They were probably doing one hopes they were doing some version of social distancing in the ports and on the ships. Oh, my God. That's fascinating. Yeah. I would not. Honestly, they look so abandoned and it looks so dystopian to see them out there just sort of like, you know,
that's
marooned.
So
in the water, that I never would have guessed that the answer was oversupply. Thanks to our producers, by the way, who noted that. One of the things that is happening to your question about what it means for stocking shelves is Costco is having trouble keeping its imported cheeses stocked, which I think we can all agree is a crisis.
The Kirkland brand of some cheeses. I would just like to say.
Oh my God, I'm Kirkland all the way. I know all the things
for sure.
The wine is excellent. I'm just saying. One final question before we go. Shout out to Patrick. Yeah. Also from San Francisco, who sent us a voice memo. Yeah.
We all feel like the aftertimes are just over the horizon. But what should we call this bumpy period of transition? And what do you think the final plot twist will be? For the name, I propose the denouement, because the current graph of new cases looks like a diagram of the falling action in a storyline. As for the final plot twist, 2020 had murder hornets. For 2021, I'm going with sniper cats. Thanks for everything.
You know, side notes. One thing that's been a big trend in the pandemic is weed gummies. I'm just throwing that out there.
I'm sorry, what? No, I'm say that again?
Weed gummies have been a big... Just in case Patrick reminded you of any conversations you've had with your friends recently in California. No, I'm just... I am not calling you a stoner, Patrick. I do think... We need a name for the mushy middle right now. The denouement is good. It almost needs to be darker, though, because we're so angry.
Do you think this is the mushy middle, or are we like, I don't know, mushy middle was like November, right?
It's not,
so please,
yeah.
Please tell me we're out of the mushy middle.
It's the mushy middle of the moment where we like know the end is coming, but the end isn't here. It's not the mushy middle of the pandemic. So denouement is better because it's sort of like, we're close to the end, but the end isn't here. So in a way, it's actually like the torture time because we're so close, but we're not there yet. And it's breaking everybody's brains. Everybody I know anyway.
Totally is.
And also sniper cats. My God.
Sniper cats. Stay inside. What do you do with that one? Okay. So there you go. Relatively brief. What do you want to know Wednesday? Back tomorrow. Questions, comments. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org. Emails are... tolerable. Voice memos are the jam.
They are the jam. We know you may have many reasons why you can't send us a voice memo, and we really do appreciate that as well. Keep it all coming, even the tweets. Make Me Smart is produced and directed, but we still love a voice memo. We just love it. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and Make Me Smart explainers.
Charlton Thorpe engineered today. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez did the theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves.
You know, people could do, like on the TikToks all just have the machines reading the text.
Really?
People could use like the machine voice. Yeah. Hello, Guy and Molly. What do you think about sniper cats? It's good radio.
Scary. It's good radio. Yeah. Well, you know, it depends on the day, right? Oh, sorry.
Sniper cats.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.